Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
progressive and regressive, I suppose, culture. Now, this is a podcast as I'm doing a cardiac rehab walk back from sort of an outpost in the Aussie bush. And so don't expect too much. This is just sort of mental filling through, but sort of I've made connections about this sort of idea of regressive culture and progressive culture. When I say regressive culture, it's still going forward, but regressively, it's not going, oh, it's regressive, but it's within confines. And that's taking rules from the outside and seeing how you can chop and change to actually make things work for you. And there's not, sort of no hard things, and I'm going to, that's part of a quote from Voltaire, because I've done a talk on Voltaire, or a podcast on Voltaire, and I've done his quotes and stuff like that. And he said something along these lines. Obviously, my memory's not laser sharp, but God, you can't do anything about the cards that God deals you, but it's up to you to play your hand as best as you can to win. This is a certain, I suppose this doesn't necessarily work there, but a lot of people just get the clip of cards dealt to them, and to be quite honest, there's some shifty dealers. You know, how do you get all the aces? Oh, it's just luck. Shuffle. So that's a beautiful saying by Voltaire. But we're going to look at regressive culture. Well, I don't mean regressive backward culture. I mean culture which accepts the information given to you and you just artfully rearrange it and somehow come out on top. It's sort of like a myth that actually works. There's a lot of unhappy people sort of not questioning the house rules. And what I want to say is this extraordinary thing called, there's an Australian actor, I really can't remember his bloody name. Oh, hell. This is one of my memory things. But it's the world's greatest showman with, I'm going to say Glenn, but it's not. It's Hugh Jackman. There you go. How do I remember that? I can't really remember any other movie that Jackson's in. Now, how did I come to see this? Well, every once in a while, once a year, the local primary school says yes to a company, and they come along with a trailer, and they go out to the oval, get things up, and I think it's back projected in actual fact, they plug it in and it blows up, and put out the speakers, and you know, charge a certain amount of money, so the school charges so much money to go in, and there's hot dogs, and as it turns out, sushi rolls is somehow this group of people really got into a sushi roll. I know this because my children were out. What a laugh. They're out seeing something called Potted Potter. This is Harry Potter. And this is 70 minutes, 7 books, 10 minutes a book. So sort of, it's like sort of ultra clever inside jokes about Harry Potter. And I dare say there was something interesting which doesn't really fit into the world. This worldview which I'm constructing for you now. About Harry Potter, this is very interesting. It's J.K. Rowling, some of the theses. Listen, I got into an argument with students, and I said, well, Harry, J.K. Rowling has a thesis. I don't know. And I got their DVD of her saying, my thesis for this is that maternal love really changes you from good to evil. Blah, blah. And she actually spoke. Students revolted. They said, I hated me. Not that Harry. How dare I actually handle Harry Potter? But that's aside. They come in late. And, of course, they've eaten dinner. I didn't know this. And so I was rushing off, and the hot dog place had gone, and got them sushi rolls. And when I got to them, they weren't interested. And I thought, what? And, of course, they'd eaten before. And so rather than saying, no, this, what's in them? And I'd have to go back through all the dark arts. Can you tell me precisely what's in this one? Because it's a sushi roll, but it's divided into three. And, you know, dear, if I don't get the order right, I could feed them the wrong bit, and it's a danger. But you've got to see The Greatest Showman. And I must admit, I do like music, and I'm a sucker for deep sound, I do find certain things I actually feel every time there's a key change. I actually do feel this tingle down my spine. It actually tinkles down my leg a little bit. You know, I am wider range, or when there's things. And there was the certain Hugh Jackman had his when he was having a drink in the pub after everything had burnt down. I think it was. It was just really, really trashy movie. But what got me is that everyone liked it. There was lots of singing, and there was lots of. Can you imagine to someone slightly? I shouldn't say autistic. You know, at the end, final scene, he comes. Spoiler alert, you can switch this off if you haven't seen the movie, but he says he's done this, you know, they have a circus, and he has the great innovation. I know, I'm going to put it in a circus tent. And that way he can actually cut the cost of putting on a circus and various bits and pieces and, just like sort of cheesiness. But the interesting thing is that all the actions were happening to people, and people were responding to it. No one could question any of it, and sort of just raw feelings just laid out with a bit of music. There was no reformation. Sort of a group of people doing social it was social experimentation, but it really wasn't. Various things at the end of the scene was CGI spectacles, you know, with the lions and elephants sort of dancing in the background, and yeah, we've let the elephants free, you know. Now, this is interesting because in New York there was actually a herd of elephants with Topsy, the giant elephant, which had killed its... The actual stories of the elephants and the abuse that happened in there. So this elephant was abused by trainer after trainer. He used to get drunk, get a smoke, and Topsy, this unusually large bull elephant, went... and killed, I think, three trainers, at which it was indicted by the city of New York, brought on trial and sentenced to death. And, compared to this, you've got the actual pictures of the horrible, horrible stuff. I don't really have these, sort of it's like, a bit like Marvel. Marvel Comics has been injected into this regime, and it is, I think, religion is the opiate of the people. I think CGI is sort of this visual speed that people get. And so this is real lack of profundity. Really structures me is that for any change, any progress or profound form, there seems to be that technical progress which you can rely on. Like, if all goes shit, you can actually just program away and invent away. Yeah, at the end of the day, you can do that. Then there's this other maneuver, which is absolutely fascinating. And this is not a maneuver of fighting against the odds. It's a very much celebrated thing, but I think it is a myth. Majority of people get there because they've got into a top school and they've been treated after well in bad times. Whereas if you're not from the right group in bad times, well, you know how the story ends. So there's that aspect of it. And there's the other things of being unsuccessful seems to be a catalyst for frame innovation. And I know this is going to offend some people, but you look at the central myth of the Christianity myth of Christ. He was completely unsuccessful. He was humiliated and pushed down and eventually crucified and chucked on the heap, but wait, sort of like the end of the movie, but he lives again, I can't believe it, it's sort of that flutter effect. But in essence, you need to actually crush and destroy a culture for something to come through. Now, before Christ, there was Socrates, and he's another person who eventually ran out of social bandwidth, and they said, well, look, you have to kill yourself. Can hold a trial, and we have this system where if you run the trial in a particular way, you have to die. You know, it's this way of planning, and this, I would have thought this is unusual, but this scenario very much exists. That is, if you want to proceed along this way, it's all going to be fair, but the result of this will be complete. Your career will finish. We can tick a box and finish your career. Which is very much the same Socrates thing, saying if you lose this debate and we find you guilty, it's all going to be corrupt, you'll die. And Socrates says, righto, I'll do it. And sort of stuck people into involuntarily realizing that what they were doing was mad. And it's sort of like this, the only way out is complete loss. So that's come in two ways. Really, in these situations, it's the people who are making a fast buck and making a killing out of this, don't see it. But it's the people on the outside who can sort of, some sort of game theory, which is, can end the game, move the game onwards. Gets me very much into Voltaire. Voltaire was someone who had a sense of where to move the end game, and then move himself such that he was the outlaw philosopher, as really, you know, Christ was an outlaw. They killed him because he was officially an outlaw. They killed Socrates because he's an outlaw. And there's another example of someone who was going to be killed and martyred, and that was Bruno, a real famous person. And he's one of the things, a person. So Bruno was contemporary of Galileo, a bit before Galileo, and he was bit of a savant, a bit of a memory person. He couldn't get along with anyone in the entire medieval or Renaissance world. Renaissance man, and he was doing a plot. I worked out that he had to actually burn himself. So he was the last person, I think second last person, burnt by the Inquisition. Now, there's several Inquisitions, but if you can imagine, there's, well, I don't know, executions, pretty tough anyway. But the thing with Bruno is that no one really understood him well enough and left a big enough footprint to be understood. But it's this, one of the various things is that you can see, there's heaps of crazy people. There's another thing where, on that spectrum, the extreme spectrum would be Colonel Custer, who is made just mistake after mistake after mistake, and sort of willed himself into oblivion. So to a certain extent that Bruno also willed himself into oblivion, stuff like that. But it's Voltaire is this fantastic person who's a poet, and he knows it, but being able to actually get the essence of I don't know, it's sort of people, so if I can say the greatest showman, for me it spoke of rule, not epoxy, rule, been drugged by rules, and just tripping off in fantasy land. You see, okay, it was just complete cheesiness. But then there's another aspect to rules, which is sort of artistry in the rules, where you're using them to navigate. The rules don't suit you, and you've got to navigate across, and it's part of the territory that the rules that begin to set up to enclose you down, and they sort of expose the hypocrisy of rules when it's with you. And so Voltaire sort of came up with these brilliant quotes, and he said this one, which is, I'm fond of truth, but I'm not so fond of martyrdom. That is, that it's this beautiful way of saying, look, I want to get truth, but let's look at these rule systems going across, so I'm obviously not going to have a legitimate conversation with you. So if you think you're having one, think again. You've got to read it with all a beautiful way of saying it. So so Voltaire was a man of letters, a communication person, but he offended someone, was sent to Britain, came to Britain, charged with the British sort of rationalism, offended people, was sort of in protected exile and underneath a noble. And then they died, and then he went to Berlin, offended people, got chucked out, and he couldn't go back to Paris. He was sort of, and so he set himself up as his own, he actually made critique, social critique, not fitting with the rules. He was the guy who said, hang on, we're going to change. And sort of when the world changed on, they sort of picked him up, and he was the hero of the revolution, even though a lot of what he believed in wouldn't actually fit, was still upper class. So it's really interesting to see how this all all pans out. And so he says these beautiful things, which are sort of like a realist. You see a lot of these people sort of kind of move that next step of not taking rules to shaping rules or getting the rules to clash against the sort of rule maneuvering. If you fight the rules and argue with the rules, you're owned by them and you can't do it, but you can in certain circumstances get them to clash and leave an echo which exists after they've destroyed your body. It exists afterwards. So that's the Christ legend, but also the Socrates legend, and various other people throughout history have done this thing and reflected on it. But Voltaire was this one next step up. He was aware that was the game and took it to a new level. And one of the quotes which I think is really good from Voltaire is saying that society needs a benevolent tyrant, which is tempered only by the occasional assassination, saying it's sort of like that complete contempt, or sort of like this other dimension of being able to stand above it and actually interact in a way, or at least the projected way, which was not running from the rules, but above the rules. And there's sort of these various quotes that I think there's another one which I liked is a man who thinks he can surprise his wife is often surprised himself, or contemplates the surprise of his wife is often surprised himself. And he made another comment about this something along the lines of men producing a world of reason which is considered nothing by the women in their life. And you know, I haven't quite caught what that quote is, but there's that added dimension that we are cohabiting this rural barrier world with observation in parallel with women who have got this slightly different interaction with it. And it's for me, I find this very fascinating, because when you look at women interacting with it, it doesn't make sense. I really don't think this horror doesn't make sense. Now, one of the things is that there is this romanticized view of human progress, for which if you make it romantic and gloss out, airbrush out various things, you wouldn't say, well, hey, that is very similar to this level of behaviour. Now, one of the, I suppose, romantic thing is that we humans are the bee's knees. It's, you know, we came up with speech, fire, stone tools, and art. Well, speech is a bit questionable. Stone tools are definitely millions of years before us, okay? Other hominids were doing it. Fire, again. Look, I don't know. I'm reading different things about the control of fire, but Neanderthals definitely did have fire. And then art, symbolic structuring, is 500,000 years ago. We're only, that's, you know, 2.5 times longer than our earliest ancestors. There was something which really didn't look all that human, scratching out a bit of artwork. And so we've got all those things happening along those lines, which is part of this myth of propriety. And so when someone dresses up and saying, I'm in here, I'm going to set these rules for you, there's, you know, they do so feeling is something that they're really not quite what they are. The other thing is this new scientist article. It's raving on at the moment. This new scientist article about this find in Iran, city in Iran, where this person had a hunch, and what he did was he saw this mound, and he said, that doesn't look like a natural feature. I think that is made of dig, dig, dig. Oh, a little bit of rock here, oh, that's interesting. Oh, dig, dig. And then he unearths a golden vase. So like, this is all like not many people understand archaeology, but you unearth a solid gold vase, underneath this thing. It's party time. But then you go in and, you realize that, what they've unearthed really is a war crime. A 3000 BC, wouldn't be Bronze Age, I suppose it could be Bronze Age. I've got to really think when the Bronze Age was. But, you know, an absolute war crime. And they could have been in a Nazi, not a Nazi concentration camp, but these various things that the Russians took everyone out and shot them. And there's just whole rooms of people massacred and killed and sliced in half and diced. And there's this feeling that what we like to do is to say, what's so significant about this is that we can sort of say, oh look, it's the Nazis, blah blah blah, and if this happened, this happened, blah blah, and therefore we're on a different track. This is so distant in the past, and it's so complete, and so that's the way it is. And of course, the victor's right there, history. So the obvious people hanging around here have evolved from people like this. And when you look at it, one of the things you don't see, I dare say, you don't see that necessarily with the Aboriginal people. However, the Maori people have killed off the original inhabitants of New Zealand. So there is this quite chilling. I'm not saying things about Maori now, but when you look at it, quite chilling ways that people kill off other people and go into this form of amnesia, obviously throughout history and stuff like that, in terms of this phase where this behaviour seeps out, goes up and it's forgotten again. And and so I would sort of add that to the idea of people. Oh, I think he said Voltaire said, people who can make you believe in absurdities can also make you do atrocities. Isn't that sort of, so this is an atrocity aspect of it. You have this person saying, and I'm saying that he's got a perspective not, he's sort of reinvented himself 3 or 4 times in his career by being able to abstract himself from the situation, yet still very much a man of the age going across. But he has this way of saying things which are just absolutely chilling to get through. And and it's sort of like the, as if the greatest showman puts you to sleep with complete absurdity and cheesiness, and it's just like comic book world. And look, I'm sure people will disagree with me, but I'll find depth and meaning in it all. It's how do you actually pick these gentle things to actually rearrange your way through. This thing of saying that people often can't lay out the truths because there's that you tell the truth, I'm just going to ignore you, I'm just going to, or there'll be real consequences if you actually trot out potentially the truth. And so they can make the risk for you intensely high. However, what I'm picking up from Voltaire is this method of actually moving to a higher dimension and saying this beautiful thing in terms of that assassinate the tyrant, let him do it. It's good for the thing, but we're going to knock him off, aren't we? Yeah? We kids. But the other thing is that by saying that, look, I'm not fond of being a martyr. So here's some truth. You know the deal with it. Here it is. It's sort of dealing from that higher level to a lower level. The people with the lower level have to not see situations because they're really in that two-dimensional comic strip world. They have to really react episode by episode, instant by instant. They're actually in those little frames and they have to move in that comic book world. And there is this other way that we can just subtly, you don't have to say a lot, you just have to open it up a little bit and say, I'd say, I don't know whether, it's amazing what people can dismiss. I think that's, dismissing and putting things down does actually eventually define the territory which you can go to. It's sort of like the locked gates operate on two ways. One is it locks you from entering it, but if you can get to the other side, it locks other people from ever getting out. It's that very great interest. So that's a bit of a rambling. I don't know what I'm going to call this one, but this is where I've reviewed progressive culture. It's not regressive, contained and uncontained culture. I think that's a better way of putting it. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.